I had been tinkering away in my little studio under the stairs, and people always compared me to Harry Potter.
Cute. Welcome to Vintage Picking with Bad Madge. I'm Tanya McAneer of Bad Madge & Company, and we are on our 14th episode for our April 2024, and I'm excited to have a special guest today, Sandra Logan.
Hello,
hello. Sandra.
Hello.
Sandra is the owner of Little Hobo Bird, right?
Yes. Yes.
And you're also the regional store manager for Sea Hive.
I am.
And so you're very busy.
Yes.
Busy, busy. Before we get into your interview, I want to do our little housekeeping. We always do a little housekeeping. We only have one sort of big thing I need to mention for our followers and our enthusiasts of Bad Madge. We have our Mother's Day stroll giveaway. It's going to be on Saturday, May 11th at Bad Madge and in South Park. It's from 10 to 4. So if you want to celebrate mom, come on down and Mama Day stroll. We do it every year with our local vendors in South Park. We partner with Red and Seed, Gold Leaf, Plants Por Favor. So it's a really fun event, fun way to take mom out for a special day. So that's on Saturday, May 11th from 10 to 4 in South Park, San Diego. So, Sandra,
yes,
here
ma'am.
We are.
Here we are.
It's been a while since I've seen you.
I know.
Yeah. So we connected during COVID and you came and did our Thursday night thing.
I did.
And that was fun. And we run into each other every so often or keep in touch.
Yeah, I'll pop in the store.
Yeah, or I'll see you at Sea Hive. Yeah. Just busy, busy. Before we get into your interview, I am going to put you on the spot. We do what's called fun facts for vintage fanatics.
Okay.
So I went on your Instagram and you love squash blossoms.
Yeah, I started silversmithing in 2009.
Okay.
And when I was invited to come do the San Diego Vintage Flea Market, I didn't really have enough stuff that I had made.
Okay.
So I started bringing vintage jewelry and I really liked Native American in particular.
Uh-huh.
So I just started collecting that sort of stuff. And then eventually I just kind of became known for the collection that I had.
Okay.
All of it was for sale, but people started asking me to repair them.
Ah, okay.
And so I was like one of the places or one of the people who would repair squash blossoms. And
okay.
It's kind of a tedious job, but...
Are you still doing that? Not so much.
You know what? It's so funny. I've been on hiatus, but someone recently sent me their squash blossom to repair. And it's been sitting... Just like, they checked in with me. They just checked in with me recently. And I'm like, well, I moved it from one spot to the other, so...
So that's the beginning. So, okay, before we get too far into your interview, so what is a squash blossom? First off, tell our viewers and our listeners what a squash blossom is.
A squash blossom necklace is a piece of Native American jewelry. It's usually two strands of benchmade beads.
Okay.
They're very distinctive, and it has what's called a naha on the bottom, which is like a downward... kind of crescent shape, and they all look a little bit different, and usually they have some turquoise, and then the squash blossom portion is the beads on the sides.
Okay.
They actually are supposed to be like a pomegranate, I've read.
Yeah.
I guess people thought they look like a squash blossom.
Blossom, yeah.
So that's where they got their name.
Okay, so I kind of segued into a question that I didn't plan to ask, but the question I had on my vintage fanatics question is, what three Native American tribes are attributed with the origin of the squash blossom necklace?
Navajo.
Okay, that's one.
My gosh, it's been so
long. Oh, she's good. She at least knew the one, because I didn't know any of them.
It's been so long since I've dealt with any Native American jewelry, honestly. Okay. Navajo.
Do you want a little help?
Yeah.
Okay, so I did a little research because I was like, what question am I going to ask you? So it's Navajo, Zuni, and Pueblo.
Yes.
And I guess...
And I used to know this, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's all good. So I guess they're each contributed to the evolution of the squash blossom over centuries. And you mentioned the crescent shape at the bottom. And do you know how that shape was inspired? What inspired it?
It actually goes way back to the Moors.
Ding, ding, ding. She got it. Moorish. Yeah. And Middle Eastern. Yeah.
Supposed to resemble like the evil eye.
Yeah.
It's a symbol of protection.
Yeah. Awesome. Good job. So she answered our questions perfectly. Good job. So, okay. Are you from San Diego?
I am from San Diego, North County.
Okay, North County. So mm-hmm. you grew up in San Diego.
I did.
And I know you have a background in retail.
Mm-hmm.
So you worked at Anthropology?
I did.
Okay, tell us a little bit about like your retail experience and how you sort of got started in your career.
So when I got married, I didn't have a job. I had been working for Starbucks and I got fired because I was very distracted by planning my wedding. Oops. I left the keys in the door and the safe open one night.
Oh, no.
And the guy delivering the milk in the morning found it.
Discovered it.
I was very, very, very distracted by my upcoming wedding. So I didn't have a job when I got married. And right afterwards, I got a job at White House Black Market.
I worked there too.
And I hated it.
I hated it too.
I absolutely hate it. It was so competitive. Yeah. And I'm just not that person. Mm. Like, I don't want to force anyone into a sale or anything.
Yeah.
Also, I love color.
Uh-huh. So, and it's so boring.
Oh my God. You can only wear white, black, beige.
Yeah.
Like,
tan.
It's stupid.
Very.
I would come home every day from work and wear this ridiculous bandana that was neon green just because I needed to, you know, infuse color back into my day.
Yeah.
This was in Carlsbad. So Anthropology was opening up next door.
Ah.
And the recruiters were sitting out front like every single day. And I'd pass them on my way to lunch and stuff. And then one day I just was like, can I sit down and talk to you guys? And we had a great conversation. They invited me to interview and they offered me like a supervisor position.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So I moved over to Anthropology and I just remember when you open an Anthropology store, the whole entire staff is involved in opening boxes, setting up the store. Like they put tools in your hand.
Yeah.
And I never experienced anything like that before. And one of the things I just always sticks in my mind is the first box I ever opened in order to set up was I open this box and I pull out this skirt and it's like the biggest, flounciest, most colorful skirt. And I'm just like, oh my God, I'm in heaven. It was the best.
Instead of being at the White House Black Market.
Oh, it was that place was terrible.
So you felt like you were in the right place.
Yes.
How long did you work for them?
I think about 8 years.
Okay. So you learned a lot, I'm assuming.
I did.
Little visuals and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I did. It was a really great education on visuals. I got to do a lot of stuff with the merchandising team. Mm. I got to be involved in making some of the window displays and things like that. Okay. They involve everyone.
Yeah.
So.
And were you managing staff too?
I was managing staff. I was the ops manager. Okay. So I did a lot of loss prevention and onboarding people and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that stuff is really important.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure it has come into play to what you're doing now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I draw a lot from my experience at Anthropology.
Sure.
I got a great education there.
That's great.
Yeah.
So then, you know, when did you start like picking vintage? Were you always interested in vintage? And you know, like when you were a kid or how did you get into it?
So I grew up kind of poor.
Okay.
So when it came time to buy clothes for school and stuff, my mom would take us to the thrift store and I would pick out the weirdest stuff. You know, I remember buying like jeans and then taking them home and having dye sessions.
Okay.
Like we just dye the jeans different colors. And so I stuck out like a sore thumb always.
Did just your mom encourage that or was she like, no, don't, you know, because my mom kind of let me do whatever I wanted.
I mean, I think more in high school, there was a little bit more resistance and it more came from my dad because he was kind of afraid that I was too different than my peers.
Okay.
But my mom would take me to Goodwill and, you know, I'd buy like vintage glasses and I'd pop the lenses out and I'd wear that to school. And I remember this one pair of, they said Honolulu pants on the label.
Okay.
But they were these huge elephant bell bottoms and that were polyester. They were electric blue and they had huge flowers on them.
Oh, wow.
And I wore them all the time in high school. I'm sure my dad hated that, but they were my favorite pants. And I bought those when I was with my mom at Goodwill.
Wow.
But I also had friends who were avid thrift store shoppers.
Okay.
And they kind of introduced me to Buffalo Exchange and stuff like that. There was other stores around, Aardvark's and stuff like that.
I remember Aardvark's.
And they would buy stuff at the thrift store, take it to places like that, and swap it out for things that fit them.
Okay.
But then they'd find stuff that was so offbeat, and they'd give it to me because I was I was actually only 98 pounds. I was very, very tiny in high school. And so anything that was really small, they'd bring it to me. Like my friend Tiffany brought me this Lurex electric blue dress one time, and I wore the crap out of it in high school. I was such a weirdo. I didn't wear anything.
Well, you had style and fashion, and you weren't just the run of the mill kid.
I guess. I mean, I always looked up to the girls who wore like head to toe 70s and, you know, had the beautiful long hair, and, you know, they had such great put together outfits and stuff. And here I am, and I'm like in my electric blue button down, you know, Lurex dress.
I bet your high school days were really fun, though. It sounds like it was probably fun.
I had a lot of fun. I was an athlete, so I was involved a lot. I did dance. And
so how did that segue into picking? Like, did you start picking when you were at Anthropology, or?
Well, I...
Like, picking to sell.
Okay, so when I was working at Anthropology, it was a few years in, and my friend Tiffany, who we were friends in high school, she was working for Dick, Jane, and Spike, which was in Oceanside.
And what is that?
It was a vintage store in Oceanside.
I wasn't familiar with that because I live down here in South.
Yeah, so she was working for the owner and doing a lot of running her business and stuff like that.
So it's like a curated vintage store.
Oh, yeah. Lots of 40s, lots of Hawaiiana, that sort of thing. But you could almost get anything there. I mean, this was the time of like the big hair flowers, you know, and rockabilly and stuff like that. So, and Blake and I, my husband, were really into rockabilly. So we were doing stuff like that, and I was amassing a collection of vintage just on my own from thrift store shopping and going to places. And she approached me one day because she and the owner of Dick, Jane, and Spike were talking about owning or opening a store together, and it just didn't really pan out.
Okay.
So she came to me and asked if I wanted to. Okay. And so we scrounged our savings. I took a loan from my parents. And we put our individual collections together.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that at all.
Yeah. So we owned a store in Oceanside.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's so cool.
It was only a couple years. The economic downturn happened in 2008.
Okay.
We
so
felt
this was
everything.
So this was a pre-housing crash.
Yes. So it was a few years before the housing crash. We had a slumlord. We turned this really crappy building that was two storefronts into one.
What was it called?
It was called Salvage Boutique.
Salvage Boutique.
And it was right across from Vintage Sanctuary. Do you remember that place? Okay. North County.
Yeah, because I'm south. That's not a place I really live.
Yeah. So Vintage Sanctuary was like a pretty big fixture right there on highway. So we owned that store for a couple years, and we get people tracking in dirt from the beach because we were one of the inlets to the beach access.
And so was how was that for you?
It was so fun. Uh-huh. It was so fun. Tiffany did most of the buying. She had a real knack for that. I mean, she would just go come into the store and be like, what do we need? And I'd say, oh, we're getting light on this and we're getting light on that. See what you can find. And she would have her day of the week where she'd hit all the thrift stores.
Okay. So she did mostly thrift stores.
Oh, yeah. Okay. She had like probably 10 or 15 places that she knew really well. And she'd just go buying. And then she'd come back at the end of the day and just dump bags. And I'd be like, oh, my gosh. Like, look at all this cool stuff.
Oh, wow.
But one time we had a lady come in, and she was like a home care worker or something like that.
Okay.
And the lady that she worked for had passed away and left her all of her stuff. And she came in and she's like, I don't know what to do with this. She left me all these things. So she brought in like hat boxes and just containers and tubs and just like kind of dumped it in my store. And she was like, how much would you pay me for this? Because I don't want it. And I wasn't the buyer. I didn't know, you know, I wasn't good at that. That was Tiffany's thing. And I didn't want to pass up the opportunity either.
Okay.
And so I was like, I don't know, like $250. I probably should have given her like $1,000.
But at the time, you got to think about also economics.
You know, I hadn't even dug into hardly any of it either. So when Tiffany got to the store, I'm like, you have to come and look at this stuff.
Did she freak out?
She was freaking out because there was like big carved Bakelite pins. And, like, beautiful, beautiful hats.
Oh, my
there
God.
There were dresses. Oh, it was everything. And I mean, I will never, ever come across something like that.
Sometimes those are like the most amazing things that can happen to you.
I mean,
you just never know.
Yeah. I felt really, like, on one hand, I felt really lucky.
Yeah.
That I had that, you know, that lady walk through my door at the right time for me.
Yeah.
But then on the other hand, I felt like, oh my God, I feel like I took advantage of her in a way, but she was so happy to get money.
And it probably would have just gotten thrown away.
Oh, she didn't care about that stuff at all.
That's the thing, yeah.
Yeah. Her thing was like, I'm just going to donate it. I'm like, please don't donate it. I'll give you some money. I just like opened my cash drawer and was like, I have $250. Here you go.
Oh my God. So you probably, it was a really good flip for you.
Oh, it was great.
Yeah.
But then probably about 6 months before the housing crash, we just started to feel it, man.
Yeah.
People just stopped coming in.
Yeah.
They'd come and browse, but it was so few and far between.
Yeah.
And to kind of pass the time, I started making jewelry because I just didn't have much to do.
And this was pre, like, social media. Like,
it was MySpace time. Yeah.
Wow.
And so I was taking, like, all broken bits and bobs and things that I was finding and, you know, drilling and wiring and just making
jewelry.
Did you kind of
self-taught yourself how to make jewelry?
Well,
did you take classes?
So that's like a little down the road. After we closed our store, I felt really empty. I went through a depression. I went back to anthropology, but I still just felt like something was missing.
Yeah.
The creative aspect of what I was doing before was really missing. The freedom of owning a store and being able to kind of make my own hours and all that kind of stuff was missing. I had been taking some of the broken hardware at Anthropology and making rings out of it.
Ew.
And I don't know if you've seen the hardware at Anthropology, but it's kind of outrageous.
Uh-huh.
The district manager came in and she saw one of these rings I had made and she was like, I want to see more. And I said, please don't flip that ring over. It looks so ratchet on the other side because I didn't know what I was doing.
Yeah.
So I kind of took that as a sign, and I had always wanted to learn how to silversmith so that I could make my own settings.
Okay.
And so I took a class here in San Diego called, over on Race Streets, the San Diego Art Academy.
Okay. Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
Uh-huh,
yeah.
With Deanna Jacobs.
Yeah. Okay.
And I just ate it.
I was going to say, you knew this was it.
I didn't have a ton of money to spend on materials and stuff like that. I didn't have a ton of money to take another class. So, you know, it was like a lot of ladies, older ladies who would bring their bottle of wine and they'd, you know, they'd kind of do a little bit, but most of the time they were talking. And so I just kind of had free rein and was probably like the ideal subject for her class because when I asked her if I could learn how to bezel, she was like, well, it's kind of the next level, but you're so far ahead. Like, you've done great at everything. Like, okay. Yeah. Yeah, your final project can be a bezel project.
Wow.
I learned really all I wanted to. And my husband was working at this place called Acme Garage. He's a hot rod mechanic.
Okay.
They had a little spot under their stairs that they weren't really using for anything. And so,
random.
Yeah. The owner, Miles, he was like, you can have this space and set up a little, you know, shop for yourself. And so I just tinkered. We built my little bench out of, you know, just whatever. Really resourceful.
Uh-huh.
I was buying just random tools that I would find at the swap meet. I think I modified some dental tools.
Making
my own stamps and stuff.
Yeah.
And I just kind of tinkered away until I figured it out. And then I set up an Etsy shop and started selling some stuff. And
okay.
Once I sold
selling your own jewelry that you were making. And you were upcycling from vintage things that you found.
I was.
And kind of repurposing them?
I was at first, and then I started making stuff from scratch.
Okay.
And that's kind of when I was like, when I sold my first piece, it was kind of large, actually. It was a jellyfish that I had made the tentacles out of chain.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I thought it was really cool. And so, you know, it was one of my more expensive pieces that I put on there because most of it was, you know, I was just tinkering around with things.
Okay.
And someone bought it almost right away.
Wow.
And I thought, okay, I can do
this. You were onto something.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So it just kind of grew.
And when was that? Like 2008, 2010?
That was like 2009.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So after the housing crash.
I was working at Anthropology.
It's interesting. That made a lot of us reinvent ourselves. It really did.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing when hardship happens, we're forced to pivot, or as a creator, I feel like it's our chance to really dig deep mm-hmm. and find that thing that we love and make something of it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then, well, and then, yeah, something happened. I wasn't on Instagram at the time. I think it was like the very early days of Instagram around 2013. And I had been tinkering away in my little studio under the stairs. And people always compared me to Harry Potter.
Cute.
And I just was kind of overworking at Anthropology.
Okay.
I had the worst experience at Christmas. I was the only manager on the sales floor. I had, you know, as much staff as I could possibly have. The poor fitting room girl had a pile, like a pile as high as her of clothes.
Oh my God. Okay.
And people there would just like take stuff off hangers and turn it inside out and then dump just it in the room. So
yeah.
There wasn't much you could do. And I had a line wrapping around the store.
Oh my God.
And I'm the only one on the sales floor because everyone's at the register or in the fitting room trying to deal with this pile. And this woman comes up to me and she's like, "Can you find me this sweater in an extra small?" And I'm like, "Not possible. Every store is going to be like this right now." And so I was like, "I'm sorry, I can try and see what the inventory is." So I looked it up. There were two stores in the entire company. And I said, "I can give you the phone numbers." And she ripped my head off.
Wow.
Over a stupid sweater on Christmas Eve.
So she was a Karen.
Like, you couldn't have any more self-awareness, right? Like, look around and see what's going on here.
Right, and you're having to deal with all of that.
Absolutely. And I was just like, this is stupid.
Like, why am I doing this
to
myself?
And that was kind of, a lot had changed with the company. They were kind of doing things a little bit differently. Mm-hmm. I got the worst review I ever got. I was like a 4.5 review every year. Mm-hmm. And they gave me the stupidest, most awful review because they were really trying not to give people raises.
Okay.
Yeah. I was just so over it.
Done. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you get to a point when you're done and you know it.
Yeah.
It was a catalyst for you.
Yeah. Yes. I had reached out to another silversmith that I saw on... I think I actually saw her in the maid store
okay. That
was next to you.
Make Good?
Make Good.
Okay.
Yeah, I had gone in there. I was considering becoming a vendor in there. And I saw another silversmith's work, and she had this really nice stamp on the back of her stuff.
Mm.
Monkeys Always Look. And so,
Monkeys Always Look. That's a cute name.
Yeah, so I reached out to her just to see where she got her stamp made because I was taking it more seriously.
Yeah,
I was going to quit my job.
Going to the next level.
Yeah, and I wanted to mark my work. And so I reached out to her. She was so nice. We met up and just kind of started a friendship on, you know, online.
Mm-hmm.
She kind of showed me Instagram.
Okay.
So I set up my Instagram account. But she was really like... She gave me a lot of information where so many people were so closed about mm-hmm. sharing their resources mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And so we talked a lot. And then when I was about to quit Anthropology, I really needed to figure out some source of income.
Yeah.
So one of them was Atomic Bazaar.
Okay.
With Brandon.
Okay.
He's one of the owners of Seahive.
Okay.
I had met him just walking in his store. He had a little selection of my jewelry, which I don't think I ever sold any, but he commissioned me to make jewelry for his wife.
Okay.
And then Allison at Monkeys Always Look was like, "Well, I'm ramping up production. Like, this is getting a lot for me." So she invited me 3 days a week to come work in her studio.
Oh, that's great
and make
experience.
Jewelry.
Yeah.
So I really learned how production worked mm-hmm. because it was a lot of the same thing over mm-hmm. and over and over
okay,
again.
Yeah,
and like
okay.
small batch, but large quantities.
Got it. Okay.
So, you know, where I was making one of a thing at a time,
mm-hmm.
she was making a bunch of the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but they were all custom stamped. She did a lot of stuff with coordinates on it.
Okay.
So it was all very personal people.
Interesting.
So I learned how to stamp really straight.
Okay.
I learned how to do production rings, just, you know, grind it out.
Okay.
And I also started working for Brandon on Fridays.
Okay. So you were working retail at Atomic Bazaar.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but where did the picking coming in? Like, were you still, after your store, you obviously probably had a lot of inventory left when you closed your store. What did you do with it?
We sold so much of that off.
Okay.
Like, we had a fire sale.
Just
we just
said,
sold
okay,
a lot of it. I kept some stuff.
Uh-huh.
But
because you're,
I mean, I still kept going to thrift stores.
Of course,
and
you can't.
I'm such a
it's
hoarder.
It's a sickness.
I'm a hoarder.
Are
I'm
you a hoarder?
I'm sorry. I'm a hoarder.
Are you a hoarder?
A little bit, yeah.
Or are you a collector?
No. I'm
a hoarder. So she absolutely is a hoarder. Okay, listeners, she's a hoarder.
But I call myself an excellent hoarder because okay. there was always.
Is there organization to it?
Yes. And no, but okay. there was always someone for something, right? So I became like my friends in high school where they'd go thrift shopping and they'd find stuff. Mm-hmm. And I'd be like, oh, this would be perfect for so-and-so or whatever. And so I was giving a lot of stuff away. And then I would find myself with so much stuff uh-huh. that I just open up my apartment and invite my friends over to come and buy things.
So you'd like have a pop-up in your
yeah,
house.
Totally.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah, so it was a really fun way to, you know, socialize
unload
with my
some
friends.
Of your stuff, make yeah. a little money, but then socialize.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And then, like, keep my problem going, right?
Yeah.
This, the hoarding that's all this is. That's problem. All this is, people. It's just keeping the problem going. It's... Make a little income, spend it on some more stuff.
That's how it is.
It's the thrill of the hunt.
It really is the thrill of the hunt.
It's not the thrill of the sale.
Okay.
Unless someone really resonates with something.
Yeah.
Or you find something really awesome and you're super stoked to sell it
yeah.
to somebody.
Yeah.
But it really is more the buying side of it.
Yeah.
Is
I get that.
Exciting.
I mean, I do like you said, sometimes you find something and you know... There's a customer that's going to be like super excited about that.
Yeah.
You know, I sold a chair over the weekend to one of my really good customers and she saw it on her Instagram and it was a 1960s French butler chair. It's made out of rattan.
Oh.
It was really unusual. And when I saw it, I'm like, that's kind of not really my style necessarily, but I liked it. And the customer that bought it, it makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Like it was so much her and she was super excited. So that, you know, that connection with that customer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're selling in your house,
yeah.
and then how did you segue into having, like, were you doing pop-ups at some point?
So,
or, because I know you have a booth at Sea Hive.
Yeah, so...
Are you still doing that?
Yes, I am. So I went back to when I started doing the San Diego Vintage Flea Market. For
okay.
a long time, it was just strictly sterling silver, you know, my jewelry, Native
okay.
American, that
okay.
sort of thing. At a certain
maybe
point...
Maybe that's where I met you, was at San Diego Vintage Flea
I think
Market.
So.
Yeah, I think that's where we met.
I think so. At a certain point, I just popped a clothing rack in there, I think, and started selling a little bit of vintage.
Okay.
Because I was doing that stuff at Kobe's here and there.
Okay.
You know,
the swap
eventually
okay.
you have to kind of like pare it down.
Uh-huh.
You know, the hoarding gets a little bit too much.
Yeah,
and,
you don't have anywhere to put it.
Yeah. And Kobe's is really convenient. Then I just... kind of made my booth half and half.
Okay. So you were doing your jewelry mm-hmm. and then clothing.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly clothing, right?
Mostly clothing.
And you tend to skew 60s and 70s, right?
Yeah.
Say mostly 70s?
I would say mostly
60s
and 70s.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Those are probably the eras that resonate with me
yeah.
most, but I like everything.
Okay.
I'm very, very eclectic and, you know, it's just like eye candy for
mm-hmm.
me. If I like it, I'm buy it.
Mm-hmm.
I
color,
don't stick
texture.
To, yes. Pattern.
Silhouette.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I feel like for me, it's more the potential of something.
Okay.
So I will buy really wacky stuff
okay.
sometimes. But I'm like, in my head, I'm thinking like, oh, this could be so great with a belt. Or if I take it to the tailor and have this chopped or
okay.
nipped or something.
So you
like
see
that.
The potential.
I
which
do.
Is, that's a really good thing. Not everybody has that.
Yeah. I have... sadly, tubs and tubs of things that are like future projects for my alterationist. I see her every probably 4 or 5 months and
okay.
I take her a tub of stuff.
Okay.
And then I get a tub back.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So
I'm there too.
I'm the person who doesn't pass up the dress because it's got a broken zipper.
See, I try to avoid the
no,
project pieces.
I'm a rescuer and my best friend has told me that. She's like, you
Sandra?
Try and rescue everything.
You're talking about
Amanda.
Amanda, yeah.
Yes.
She doesn't probably do a lot of that, does she? Or?
She does. Okay. Yeah. If it's really, really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She
if
knows
it's worth
it. Has
it.
Potential.
But
yeah.
I'm like, oh, this dress is so cute. Like, look at this pattern. It just needs a new zipper.
Yeah.
I'm the
or
one.
Or a button. Those
yeah.
things, I depends on what it is. I
yeah.
try to avoid too much project pieces.
But then it goes in the bin. And
yeah.
I'm like, I don't have
yeah.
time for this right
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'll go in the bin and then you can give the bin to your alterations person.
There you go. And then it costs even more for me to own that thing.
Yes.
And then I can't, you know, like I often can't pass on that price, but I can try and get back what I put into it.
Yeah.
And that's the most important thing to me, because otherwise that, where does that thing go?
Exactly.
If no one wants to repair a zipper,
yeah,
you know, and
I agree,
you know, so it's worth it to me.
You like to save things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think people in the business that we're in, they like to save things. Mm-hmm. I like to see things that are not put into the landfill, that something is going to be reused and it has a new life and someone else is going to enjoy it.
Yeah.
You know, hopefully it gets out of that bin at some point.
Yeah. Well, I love this whole thing that's going on right now where people are turning like quilts and old textiles and things like that into clothing and just giving them a whole new life.
Yeah.
Oh,
I mean, it doesn't bother me, because I think sometimes, especially like a quilt, I saw there's a guy that I follow on Instagram that takes a lot of like afghans, like knitted afghans, and sometimes the, you know, the kind of janky polyester fabric or, you know, thread or yarn that he's using or they used isn't great on you if you want to sit with an afghan on you.
Yeah.
But then it can be made into something with a lining and it looks amazing and totally one of a kind.
Yes.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
So I agree. Yeah. So when did you get into having a full-time booth?
Okay. So when Brandon opened Sea Hive.
Okay.
Because
he had Atomic Bazaar.
He had Atomic Bazaar.
And then opened Sea Hive in Oceanside.
Yes. He,
okay.
So he saw that the building was for rent.
It's a rad building.
Yeah. It was an old Harley dealership.
Yeah, it's a really cool building.
It's so wild for a store, because it, like, people see it from the front and they're like, oh, it's only this big.
No, it's
but it just
massive.
Keeps going
and going.
It's huge.
And it's on 101.
It's on 101 in Oceanside. So he saw, he was walking his kid in the stroller, and he saw that it was for rent. And so he walked down the street a couple blocks down to Estate Sale Warehouse, and he talked to Todd, who's the owner there.
Okay.
And he was like, hey, that building's for rent. You want to open? And we had talked about the Mall of Cool when I was working for him.
The Mall of
the
Cool.
The Mall of Cool. The Mall of Cool. I talked about this with Tiffany
in our
store.
The hell is the Mall of Cool?
The Mall of Cool is Sea Hive.
Okay, okay.
Like a big multi-vendor space where different people who, you know, couldn't probably afford a traditional retail space could all be together.
That's awesome. Okay.
So, I mean, when I had Salvage Boutique with Tiffany, we talked about the Mall of Cool, and that's probably where the Mall of Cool name came from.
I love that.
And then when I worked with Brandon, we've talked about it constantly. Like, wouldn't it be so cool if we could get our friends together and do something like this just on a larger scale? So he actually made it happen.
Wow.
Me and Kenny.
No, Kenny.
You don't know Kenny?
Maybe I do. I don't know.
I think you know Kenny. Everybody knows Kenny. So Kenny King, he's Vintage Mercantile.
Okay. Okay.
He and I were invited by Brandon. I think we were two of the first vendors that he invited to come and pick out our spaces there.
Okay.
And at the time I was just doing silver, so I just picked, you know, a spot right by the register for my jewelry case.
Okay.
Which I still have. And that was kind of it. That's how I got into vending inside a store.
Okay. And it's consignment. It's all consignment, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then a few years into Sea Hive Marketplace, Brandon's friend owned a store right by the Electra bike shop in Encinitas.
Okay.
So we did a pop-up shop just for the summer. There was about a dozen of us vendors,
okay,
all really, like, really cool. And he had me kind of heading that.
Okay.
Everybody had to work in the store. So
okay.
It was
so if you had a booth, you had to work. Okay.
Yeah. So it was kind of done like that. And then I got really ambitious and I took a big space and I started selling vintage clothing again.
Okay.
So that's how I got back
into
that.
It's funny how the road just keeps, you know, winding and
I mean, I had a ton of stuff too, because I'm a hoarder.
So you had inventory. It's always like, okay, I mean, that's how I opened my store was I literally just took shit out of my garage and opened a store.
You're not a hoarder.
No. It was good stuff. And I just grabbed some friends and said, hey, do you want to put some stuff in the store and do consignment? And that's how it kind of evolved.
Yeah.
And it's really amazing when you think about, like, you just, people like us, we just always are gravitating to vintage or old stuff that makes us happy.
Yep.
You know,
we can't fit it all in our homes.
Right.
But if you're out and about and you find really great stuff that's like at a really reasonable price and you just have that feeling that you can't pass it up.
Any, like, things that really stand out to you. You told us the story about the lady that came into the shop you had. Any other like fabulous picks that
you've just... Oh my gosh. I will never forget, and I have dreams about this. I don't know if you have picking dreams.
But I do. Of course I do.
My best friend Amanda, who is also, she's a high-end vintage
clothing dealer. Yeah, I'm hoping to have her on the show at some point.
I hope so too. She's wonderful. I love her so much. Her business is Butch Wax Vintage. Yep. She heard from Vaughn, who you also know, that there was this incredible estate sale happening. It was the original concessioners of the Del Mar Fair.
Oh,
I'm
wow.
pretty sure you were you not there?
No.
Oh my gosh, I'm so surprised. They had a huge property. They had these two gates in the front. So everybody was like
lined up there. Oh my
yeah,
God.
Yeah, just like a mob.
Oh my God.
And so I think it started at 8 o'clock. We got there super early. So we were right at the gate. And as soon
as cattle call, everybody's like,
exactly. As soon as the gate opened, both of us just started booking it toward the house.
Oh my
gosh. Running.
Okay.
And everyone was running, but we were running the fastest. She almost lost a shoe. Oh my gosh, it was the whole thing. So we get into the house, immediately go upstairs.
To the clothing, okay.
She goes in one bedroom, and I remember looking in the bedroom at her, and she's like, her feet are up in the air, and she's trying to unplug a lamp behind a dresser.
So she's like bending over.
Yeah, yeah, just like, I gotta have this lamp. And then I went into the next room and I just yelled, closet! And I never had an experience before where I got to go an estate sale and be like the first one at the closet.
Oh my God.
But I just started, I did that thing where you
just
like
grab
clothes
oh, you did the thing.
And throw it in a pile because that's what you do
when
you get there first. So
I
just put everything in a pile and then Amanda and I went through it. And then the rest of the time, I mean, this house was enormous and every room was a different theme.
Oh, wow.
So there was like a Mexican theme.
Oh, wow.
There was clowns. I don't know. There was even a trap door, I think, to like a basement.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
But the house was enormous and there were people everywhere and their lawn was covered in piles of people's stuff.
Okay.
So they didn't have anywhere to hold
anything.
The
whole section.
The whole entire lawn was the whole section. And so at one point I'm up and I'm taking the bark cloth curtains off the window. And I'm literally like, one foot is in the windowsill and the other foot is on a piece of furniture and it's very, very dangerous. And I'm ripping these curtains down.
You're like, I have to have these.
Yep.
Oh my
gosh. It was
gosh.
Just like that. And there was no organization.
Yeah.
It was just like
free for
the
all.
House.
It was a free for
They
all.
Had a huge barn full of old signs.
Oh my gosh.
It
sounds
amazing. There was a room that was full of like sewing stuff and textiles and things. And, you know, it was toward the end of our run. And we were just like kind of over it at that point because we looked at so much stuff.
Yeah.
We were covered in dust.
Your
Everything
brain
was super
just starts
dusty.
To kind of shut down.
Yeah, you're just like, okay, there's another room? Oh, God. So we're in this textile room. We're kind of rummaging through things, not really finding anything. And I can't remember which one of us found this bag, but pulled out a couple of like 1970s little baby tees.
Oh.
And they had Don's Tacos on the back. And
Don's Tacos.
Don's Tacos from his taco stand
oh
at the Del Mar Fair. And so they're so iconic. And so I took one and she took one.
Oh my
and
God. Do you still have it?
I still have it.
Yeah.
I think I have two actually.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But they're like this great orange color.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, I love that thing.
So we're getting close to the end here. Okay. And how can people find you? So you're at C-Hive. You're doing operations or managing, correct?
Yep.
Like,
so
C-Hive now has three locations?
C-Hive
four?
Has four locations.
Four locations.
The original store in Oceanside.
Okay, and that's C-Hive
Marketplace.
Okay.
We have C-Hive Station. That's
okay.
in Liberty Station in
Which
Point
is
Loma.
Beautiful. Okay.
We have C-Hive Mini in Mission Valley Mall.
Okay, been there too. It's really
and
cute.
We have C-Hive La Jolla.
I haven't been
La Jolla
there yet.
Village.
Gotta check it out.
That's a great store.
It's new, right? It's the newest one.
Yeah.
So four locations. And are you kind of floating around to all four, helping like, manage and hire?
I manage the three that are in San Diego.
Okay.
I have spaces in all four stores.
Oh,
though.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay, you do have stuff in all four stores.
Yes.
Okay. So people can find your stuff in all four stores.
Yes.
But you're also on Instagram, Little Hobo Bird.
Little Hobo Bird is mostly my silversmithing. Mm-hmm. My vintage is Little Hobo Birdoir.
Okay.
Like, you know, boudoir.
Yeah.
Just so that I could differentiate
the
two.
Yeah, separate. Okay.
Yeah.
So they can find you on Instagram.
Yes.
And maybe popping around one of the many stores at Seahive.
Yes.
Well, I really appreciate you being on our show today.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Great stories. Yes. So thank you, everyone, for listening to Vintage Picking with Bad Madge. This is our 14th episode. Next month, we'll land on May 16th. It'll be our 15th episode. If you like us, please like the podcast and subscribe. We always love our subscribers. And thank you, Brian, our producer. So if you can share with your friends and help the show get discovered, we would appreciate it. If you have a question or a comment, you can always send us an email to badmadgepodcast@gmail.com. And last but not least, if you come into Bad Madge and you shop with us, you mention the podcast, you get 20% off your purchase.
That's great.
And we've had quite a few people do that. So please come on in to Bad Madge. We're open every day, 7 days a week. And I'm Tanya McInear, and have a great day. Thanks for listening.